Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Sadnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanyan, Wasiyake. May everything be well with you as it is with me. Today is Wednesday. It's another beautiful day here in Issaquah, Washington, the location from which I broadcast these classes. I have an apartment here with my wife, Rebetzin, and we moved up here a couple of years ago to be closer to our children who have jobs here in this area. One second here while I take care of this. All right, sorry about that. Turn off my cell phone so that doesn't happen again here. It's a call from my dentist. I had to have a root canal on yesterday, actually. So, anyway, that all went well. It didn't hurt. And he took care of the problem. All right. Okay, and now, before we continue with our teaching, I will do as I do before every class, the beginning of every class, and I will recite the Kaddish for the mourners of the dead, for the dead and for the mourners of the dead. Please close your eyes as you listen and remember that someone to whom you were close, remember someone to whom you were close who has died. And in doing this, you'll bring them into your memory, and you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your consciousness. Yishkadal ve'yishkadash me'rabo, bo'omodi ve'ro kirase, ve'yamlik melkase, be'kayakon uvyo mekon, uvkaye dekol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman koryev, ve'imru omein. Yehesh me'rabo mevorak, le'olam le'olme omayo, Yisparak ve'yistabak ve'yisparar ve'yisramam ve'yisnase ve'yishadar ve'yishalat ve'yishalal Shmeidu kacho beraku le'elo minkol berkeso ve'shoroso tushbekoso ve'nekamoso da'amuron be'omo ve'imru omein Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo ve'kayim aleinu ve'el kol Yisrael ve'imru omein. Ose shalom bimromov, hu yashe shalom oleinu ve'el kol Yisrael ve'imru omein. Thank you very much. In our last meeting, we talked about exile and redemption and how they play a central, if not an overriding theme, that runs through all of Jewish mysticism, but particularly the Kabbalah, and even more specifically, Lurianic Kabbalah. We talked about the many faces of exile. We talked about how Adam and Eve are one face of exile, having been exiled from Gan Eden, from the world of absolute, where everything is spiritual. Nothing is material. In fact, everything is potential, not actual. But they were actualized in spiritual form. We talked about the cosmos itself being in exile. For all of the worlds that were created, we have four universes that we talk about in Kabbalah: Atzilut, Bereah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. And all of those worlds and the ten sephirot that are in each one of those worlds, okay, the supernal lights, the Godhead, all of those as a result of Adam's sin were dislocated, were due to the shattering of the vessels, were dislocated and fell downward from the higher spiritual levels closer to God, to Ein Sof, the transcendent, unknowable, ineffable, unnameable God, fell further away down in the direction of darkness in the abyss. Okay, and we talked about, so the very worlds themselves are in exile. And we'll talk some more about that in detail in a moment. The human soul is in exile. For the human soul originates, is a divine, eternal thing, originates in God, and descends into this world of actuality, this world of action, where it is exiled into the human body, in this world of materiality and time. And only after the body dies is the soul released, and can it return to the world, the spiritual world of the divine. We talked about the ego being exiled from the self. And this is in terms of Jungian archetypal psychology. Of course, Carl Gustav Jung was a great theologian, although he's never portrayed by the psychological trade, or profession, I should call it, as a theologian. But in fact, that's what he was. In fact, he even taught that he had never, with all of his patients, he had never found a single illness that he had come across or treated. I'm not talking about physical ailments now. I'm talking about patients who came to him in his life as a psychologist, as a psychotherapist. He, in fact, was probably the inventor of psychotherapy. Not psychoanalysis, but psychotherapy. I'm not talking about Freud here, I'm talking about Jung. He said that in all of his career, he had never come across a patient whose psychological illness did not have as its roots a fundamental religious problem. So what he's saying is that the root of all psychological and emotional disturbances is our relationship with God. Baruch Hashem. What a wonderful insight. But anyway, I got onto that about Jung because he's the originator of the idea that the ego is an archetype that is split off from the self. The self being God, being the super archetype, so to speak, the overriding central organizing principle of the human psyche. He refers to as the self with a capital S. And it's the ego that is split off from that. And the ego does not exist until there is a fetus. And the fetus achieves consciousness. And that's when the ego is split off from the self. But at that time, it shares its consciousness until it's born. It shares its consciousness with the ego. And then when the fetus is born, a process of separation, splitting off, continues. And then through the rest of our lives, it's a matter of coming to deal with the fact that we're alone in the world. Okay, we're essentially alone in the world, although there are many of us around. We have mothers, fathers, relatives of every kind, friends, neighbors, enemies. We're all human beings. We're all fundamentally the same. But the ego has to come to deal with the fact that essentially we are on our own. We are on our own. And then we have to come to terms with the fact that we are not God, but God does exist. And then this is all a part of what's called the process of individuation. The ego has to try to mature to the point where it realizes that it can't control everything. It's not God. It can't control its own fate. It has a fate and a destiny about which it can do nothing, no matter how hard it tries. And there are lots of wonderful stories about people who try to avoid their destinies. And the very things they do to avoid them are what triggers the fate they were trying to avoid. And those are essentially true stories in terms of human histories. It's a fact that we all share, that we can control the small things. Our egos can control the small things, but the large things are our path through this life. Cannot be controlled by us. It's determined before we come down here. Okay? And then what the ego has to do is to set, is to return to God. It has to find God once again, the self, with a capital S, and enter into, build a bridge back to it, and enter into a partnership in which the ego has to surrender its power and control to that of the self. Has to re-harness itself to the self, which is God, and say, not my will in this world and in this life, Lord, but your will shall be my will. Tell me what to do, and I will give all of myself to you. I will make myself your instrument in this world. And then, and only then, can we lead a fulfilling life. So we talked about that in our last meeting, about how the ego is estranged from or exiled from the self. The name of God is exiled in essence. It goes from a unity, Havaya, and split into at least 10 pieces, into each one of the individual names of God associated with each one of the 10 Holy Sephirot. But beyond that, each one of those 10 Sephirot has inside of it the other 9 Sephirot. And each one of those 9 has within it the 9 that each specialization doesn't have, on and on ad infinitum. So God's name is split into an innumerable number of separate names. Beyond this, the Godhead itself, one of God's essential essences, personalities, the Shekinah, is split off from her groom, the Holy One, blessed be He. Okay, and we talked about that, and I won't get into that anymore. But we talked about all of those things. Today, I want to talk a little more about the nature of exile and the process of redemption through tikkunim, the performance of acts of spiritual repair, tikkunim. Okay, first of all, about the nature of exile. Exile and redemption are a fundamental part of cosmic law. Okay? You look anywhere in the universe, whether it's into outer space and how the planets function and the stars and the galaxies, how they come into being and how they die, how they operate while they're living, or look inside yourself and look inside the human body, the human being, into the biological systems that operate. Exile and redemption, you will find as a theme running throughout them. Exile is a metaphor for any deviation from the proper order of things. Okay? And it's something that must be set right. So it's any deviation from the proper order of things, or we could say this, any dysfunction of the proper running of things is a metaphor that is exile. It's when things aren't going right. For instance, the exile of the Israeli people into the diaspora, into all of the nations of the world. Things have not been going right for the Jews ever since their final exile by the Romans in AD 135. And they destroyed Jerusalem and cast them out, said, you cannot live in Palestine on pain of death. And they had to go elsewhere. Things have not been right for the Jews ever since. Okay? Things are not right for the ego. I was talking a little bit earlier about the ego, and now I'm talking about how we can look at the egos in exile and how from the self, and how exile is a deviation from the proper order of things. The proper order of things, it can be described as the smooth, functioning, harmonious operation of all the parts of a complex whole, a system that is properly functioning. Anyone who looks at their life cannot say that everything is going right for more than a short period of any given time. The common experience of all human existence is suffering. I know some of you are going to say, that's really radical teaching. No, it's not radical. I'm just asking you to look, take off the blinders, and look about you. What is the common experience of everybody? I don't care if you're the richest Hollywood star or whatever. They've all got problems in their lives. And I don't mean minor problems. I mean everybody's got major problems in their lives. Everybody suffers. And in fact, the common experience of humanity, the common way of looking at life is that most of it is suffering, interrupted by brief periods of happiness. And it isn't something that we need to debate. This is something that's recognized by every major religion in the world. It's recognized by Buddhism. I think what they call the nature of our life samsara, which is, it's a description of, it's the word they use to describe suffering. That's the nature of human existence. So that means that things aren't operating the way that they were intended. They're certainly not operating the way that God intended. God did not intend for us to all be suffering. God created us, as I've said in earlier teaching, for the purpose of creating a companion with which he could commune, with which he, as it says in Genesis, and God walked in the garden in the cool of the afternoon and communicated with Adam and Eve. He created us so that he could have us as companions and so that he could share with us his infinite goodness. But that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. The ego is estranged from the self. The ego is the human concept of I-ness, and it is separated, estranged from the self, which is the ordering principle of the human psyche. The self is also the ordering principle of the universe, because the self is God, and inside every one of us is the self, and that's a piece of God. Because that's the only thing that animates us, the only thing that keeps us going. God, remember, is all and is in all. Okay. So, exile can be considered as a deviation from the proper order of things, an imbalance. Now, Rabbi Judah Low of Prague, who is a contemporary of Isaac Luria in the 16th century, a great Kabbalist, wrote in his book Netzach Yisrael, meaning the glory of Israel, he wrote this, quote, he was also a philosopher, so he was a Kabbalist and a philosopher. And here it is kind of in philosophical terms. The exile of Israel and the destruction of our temple are an exception to the order of the universe. And it is known that whatever is a deviation from the order of the universe is an exception and has only temporary existence. Now I'm going to read that again. I want you to think about this. This is important. The exile of Israel and the destruction of our temple are an exception to the order of the universe. And it is known that whatever is a deviation from the order of the universe and an exception has only temporary existence. Now, he wrote that in the 16th century. It is a fact that is taught to us by modern science. The physicists tell us that all systems seek equilibrium, and that any system in a state of equilibrium that is disturbed and falls out of equilibrium into disequilibrium immediately seeks to return to its former state of equilibrium. So the physicists are telling us exactly what Rabbi Judah Low of Prague was teaching back in the 16th century. That is, that whatever is a deviation from the order of the universe and an exception has only a temporary existence. Okay? Being out of balance cannot continue indefinitely. Being in disharmony is not a state of equilibrium, and it's artificial, and it cannot survive for very long. The physicist teaches this. This can be seen. I'll give you a couple of, at least one practical example. If you take an object that's round and you spin it, say you take a coin and you flick it on its edge and spin it, like we've all done, you know, as children and adults or whatever, just having fun. And you spin that coin will spin on its axis. But if you take if you solder a piece of silver onto one edge of that coin, or you take a piece of chewing gum and you stick it onto one side of that coin, and then you try to spin it, it won't spin. It'll just fly across the table or the floor. It cannot spin because it's unbalanced. You can also see this in the fact that in the world of mechanics and machines, we have to balance flywheels before we put them into machines and start the machines. And the same with airplane propellers. I'm getting a few more examples here. Airplane propellers, they have to be balanced. Each end of a two-bladed airplane propeller has to be balanced according to the center of the axis it's going to turn on the spindle that drives the propeller. What happens if we don't balance a flywheel or we don't balance an airplane propeller? It's out of balance, and it cannot maintain that being out of balance. It will fly apart. It will literally vibrate an engine apart. It will literally vibrate the airplane apart. It will tear itself apart because it isn't in balance. Now then, a little more on the nature of exile. Okay, I'm going to read two short passages written by Meir Ibn Gaba from his book Abadat HaKadesh. It was published in Venice in 1566, actually as a manuscript. And consider this. This is on the nature of exile as it refers to the world. Everything was tainted and hence requires purifying and refining. For the spirit of uncleanness has spread over the world and all orders have been corrupted. Pure and impure have mingled and the abomination has been introduced by the sinners into the sanctuary. Therefore, purifying and refining is required to restore everything to its pristine state. For the sweet must be extracted from the bitter that has possessed it, as by robbery, and the sweet will eject the bitter that had penetrated it, so that all will be perfected. But until everything is perfected, it is impossible that the Messianic King come. And he goes on to say, at the end of the next chapter, and this, in referring to what I just read to you, is the tikkun, meaning spiritual repair, of the world, and the restoration of all things to their pristine state, as they were before Adam sinned. For then, meaning before Adam sinned, all the worlds were perfectly balanced and coordinated, and the great name was in perfect union with his glorious Shekinah. But by Adam's sin, the unity was disrupted, the buildings destroyed, and the world corrupted, so that the innermost things were turned out, and the outward things penetrated inside, and the spirit of uncleanness spread over the world, as a result of which humankind sinned further, hewed down the beautiful plantations, and sundered the holy union. But with the coming of the Messianic King, all will be repaired. For the curtain that separates and prevents the union of all things with God, will be removed, and then the purpose of creation will be fulfilled. So there's two things I want to look at here. One is the nature of exile, as described in these two passages by this great Kabbalist, Meir Ibn Gaba, also a 16th century sage. And so one is the nature of exile, and the other is the idea of Tikkun, and how that ties into the coming of the Messiah. It says here, everything was tainted, and therefore requires purifying and refining. Now, it goes on to describe certain conditions. It says that uncleanness has spread over the world, corrupting all orders. And then a little bit later it says, for all the worlds were perfectly balanced before Adam sinned. Okay? And coordinated. Okay? That means that after Adam's sin, the worlds were no longer balanced or coordinated. This is the condition that we're talking about. We talked about last week when I mentioned about the fact that the worlds below the world of absolute, the worlds of Berea, creation, Yetzirah, formation, and Asiya, action or doing, fell into the abyss. They fell lower than they were originally intended to be, farther away from God. Okay? God himself restored them pretty much the upper two worlds. When I say upper two worlds, I'm talking about the ones above our world. Ours is the world of Asiya. He restored the world of Berea and Yetzirah to their higher level, where they belonged. But he did not restore the world of Asiya to the level, he did not raise it up from the level it's in, which is the level of the abyss, to the level where it belongs, which is just below and still near to the world of Yetzirah, the world of formation. He left that spiritual repair to mankind so that mankind could earn and therefore merit the closeness and the goodness that God will bestow upon man in the world to come. Okay? And then that's what's being talked about here in these passages where he says, therefore, purifying and refining is required to restore everything to its pristine state. And look at the concept here of refining and purifying. What does that mean? That implies that something has impurities in it. It's impure and unrefined. Impure means that bad things that we don't want have been mixed in with good things that we do want. Refining is like a it can be used as in an analogy about the refinement of precious metals from their raw ore. Okay? What do? You heat it up. And it gets so hot that it becomes molten. And then what rises to the surface are the impurities. And those are drained off and separated from the pure gold or the pure silver. That's called the dross. The dross is separated out, drained away. And here's what he says, what Meir Ibn Gaba says. Therefore, purifying and refining is required to restore everything to its pristine state. For the sweet must be extracted from the bitter that has possessed it, as by robbery. And the sweet will eject the bitter that had penetrated it, so that all will be perfected. But until everything is perfected, it is impossible that the Messianic King come. Now, what does he mean? For the sweet must be extracted from the bitter that has possessed it. This is a reference to the falling of the holy sparks. When the worlds were destroyed, when the vessels were shattered, and I talked about the worlds with Adam's sin, the worlds fell into a low place. Well, those worlds were shattered, and shards of them containing, made up of God's light of emanation, fell along with some of the contents, which is God's light of emanation. Most of that all went back up to God, but some of that fell into the abyss. And those shards, which also included, and the reason the vessel shattered is because those shards, the shells, when the world was first made, contained Reshimu. That's the light of God that did not withdraw when he contracted within himself to make the primordial womb in which to create the universe. What was left, sort of like if you empty a perfume bottle, there will, even though you let it all drip out, it won't all be dry. There will still be some of that oil clinging to the sides. Well, that light that did not leave did not want to create. And so it didn't withdraw from the primordial space. And when God created the vessels, that light that did not wish to create, one could call it a dark light, a doubting light, it became mixed with the light of emanation which God was using to make the vessels, to hold his ten sefirot, to make the vessels, to hold his manifestation to the world. And therefore, those impurities meant that those shells were not pure. They were impure and not strong. And so therefore, when God began to fill those vessels up with the light of his emanation, they were not strong enough to contain that light. And at one point, they flew apart. Okay. So now, those shards containing a mixture of God's thoughtful light of emanation that wanted to create and God's thoughtless light, his dark light that did not want to create, in the form of those shards, fell into the abyss. But with them, they took some of God's light of emanation. And they enclosed around that light of emanation and trapped it. And that's what Meir Ibn Gabaa is talking about. And that creates an imbalance in the world. That creates a situation where even though God restored those broken vessels and made new ones, there is still some of God's light of emanation that's trapped in the form of holy sparks in the abyss, trapped in the evil shells of the broken, shattered vessels. And until those are raised up, the world will continue to be out of balance and in disharmony and chaos. And that's what Ibn Gabaa means here. He says, for the sweet, meaning the holy sparks, must be extracted from the bitter, meaning the evil shells, the husks, that have possessed it as by robbery. And the sweet will eject the bitter. And what he's talking about there is there are good things that have the spark of the evil shells within them, that have bits of evil within them. All mankind has this. This is the evil urge, the Yetzer Hara, that is in each of us. And we have to eject that. We have to let the Yetzer Hatov, the urge to do goodness, to win out over the Yetzer Hara, the urge to do evil, so that all will be perfected. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a process of separation. Separation of good from evil. Taking things in which good and evil are mixed up all together in one, and pulling them apart. Pulling the evil out and putting it in one place, on one side, on the left side, and taking that which is good and placing it on the right side. And then, these can be unified together in the center, in the form of the Holy Shekinah rising up to come into union with the Holy One, blessed be He. Okay, now, before Isaac Luria, and here's the big point I want to make in today's teaching here. Before Luria, it was the general, the general consensus of Kabbalists that it was our duty to lead lives of righteousness, but that the work of Tikkun would take place, largely take place, with the coming of the Messiah in a catastrophic end-of-day scenario. Okay, but that changed with Isaac Luria. With Isaac Luria, that changed to this concept, that what it says here, what Ibn Gabbah said, but until everything is perfected, it is impossible that the Messianic can come. So what the view became after Isaac Luria is that each one of us, that redemption comes gradually, not all at once, and it comes through the work of human beings over centuries, not by the appearance of the Messiah who waves his hand and everything is made whole. In fact, it's taught that the Messiah can't come until the world is made ready for him, and the world isn't made ready for him until all of this work of redemption is almost completely done, if not completely done. Many Kabbalists teach that every single spark has to be located and raised up to God. Every single spark that has fallen into the abyss has to be located and raised up. Now, not all Kabbalists say that. Others say that God will require us to do most of that work. Because after all, he restored the upper two worlds of Berea and Yetzirah, and we only have to clean up the world of Asiya. So it's only fair that we do something. And we will do it over however many centuries and millennia that it takes. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the repair of the world. It's what it is. It's the repair of the world of Asiya. And here's a real good description of it. This is a well-known conversation between two rabbis that is in the Midrash, Tehillim 22:13. Rabbi Chaya and Rabbi Solomon ben Hafta walked at sunrise in the valley of Arbela, and beheld the light of dawn breaking through. Said Rabbi Chaya to Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon ben Hafta, said Rabbi Chaya to Rabbi Shimon, thus is the redemption of Israel. Rabbi Shimon answered, this is what scriptures say, when I sit in the darkness, God is a light unto me. At first, it comes little by little, then it breaks through, then it increases and multiplies, and finally it spreads everywhere. Okay, what is this a reference to? This is a reference to the redemption. It's like the rising of the sun. It's like the breaking of dawn in the dark night sky. When I sit in darkness, God is a light unto me. At first, we can just say it, instead of it, the redemption comes little by little. Then it breaks through, then it increases and multiplies, and finally it spreads everywhere. Baruch Hashem. This is a reference to the Ma'asim Tovim, the good deeds, the works of good that we are required to do as human beings. This is a reference to the work of repairing the world, which is the only reason human beings exist. We don't exist to go out and get an SUV and get a pickup truck and have four-wheel ATVs and snowmobiles in our garage ready to go and just have a life of fun. That's not why we're here. We're not here to acquire wealth. We're not here for those things. We exist on an existential level. On a metaphysical, spiritual level, we must justify our existence. Otherwise, there is no meaning to one's life. Think about that. When you get to the end of your life, if you cannot justify your existence, then your life had no meaning. Absolutely. No way around that. Means you are just playing around when you're here in this world. God put you here to be His instrument, the instrument of His will. He put you here to repair this world. This world is filled with evil. Just, you can't avoid it. It's in every newspaper. It's on every television broadcast. It's in the workplace where you work. It's in your neighborhood. People are beating each other to death in the streets every day. They're shooting each other in drive-by shootings. They're robbing places. They're stealing, but these are just the criminals. Then you have the normal people, and you have husbands who are beating wives and children to death. And I don't need to go on from this. What I'm trying to point out to you is that this world is suffering. This world is in the abyss, and God wants it raised up. And God put us here to do it. He put you here to do it. And it's your job and it's my job to effect this spiritual repair on the world, to make this world a better place. And we can do it through spiritual actions, and we can do it through outer actions that affect other people. Well, that concludes today's teaching. And I'm very happy that you could be here with me. Our next day of teaching will be next Monday at the same time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And this teaching will be rebroadcast tonight at 10 p.m. in the same room at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't forget to remember God at least twice a day. And until we meet again, may you go from strength to strength. Zeigesund.